This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this Deepbridge Discovery podcast. My name is Andrew Aldrich. The idea of these podcasts is to bring to life the people and the companies behind Deepbridge Capital. To that end, I'm delighted to be joined by Rob Rule, who's CEO and founder at Entropics, an investing company within Deepbridge Life Sciences, EIS and SEIS funds. Rob, great to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Right, it's good to be here, Andrew. Thanks.
Great. So, first and foremost, could you just give us a bit of a background to Entropics and kind of your background before starting Entropics?
Yeah, sure. So, Entropics is a young biotech company. We're based locally here in the Northwest. And the ambition for Entropics is to develop enzymes that are capable of degrading plastics.
Brilliant.
But the underlying technology that we have for developing enzymes with improved performance can be used in a whole range of different industries, from diagnostics to detergents to pharmaceuticals to foods. And in fact, the first customer interest that we've had has been in the diagnostic sector.
All right, brilliant.
So that's what we do. In terms of the background to the development of the business, in many ways, it was a product of COVID.
Okay.
So my co-founder, Professor Dave Hornby, who'd been a professor for 20 years or so at the University of Sheffield, he decided during COVID that he would leave his full-time role.
Okay.
And he approached me. We've been friends and colleagues for many years, Dave and I, and he approached me with a number of ideas and technologies that he'd had in mind for the development of improved enzymes.
Okay.
And both of us thought that this idea...
Was enzymes thing you knew about before, or was that kind of the professor's kind of
Well, really, Dave is very much the biotech brains behind the company. Even though I've done a handful of different things in my career, I hadn't really done real biotech molecular biology in the past. So my background, I did train as a scientist, so I trained as a physicist, which in this particular industry is almost the wrong type of scientist. And then, but really in my career, I've spent my career in a variety of different industries. So even though some of them have been technically based, the majority of my career has been in business management, starting off originally here in the Northwest, in the chemicals industry. So typical graduate role, joining a big chemical company, ICI, spent the first 10, 11 years.
And that's only about 3 miles down the road from where you're based now.
Absolutely, yeah. So obviously based in Dursbury now. And in fact, some of my technical work before I joined ICI was in Dursbury as well.
Right, okay.
So I'm almost, you know, recycling some of my activities.
Excellent.
And then after ICI, 10, 11 years there, I worked for about 10 years in the early stage tech industry.
Brilliant.
Did some venture capital work of my own. Worked with IP Group, investing in university spinouts.
Great.
And worked in a seed fund in Liverpool. And then the last 10 years of my career, I went back into industry. And I worked in an international privately owned engineering group.
Okay.
I was a director of that group, helped to run one of the divisions, and did some acquisitions work.
So it must be quite... kind of coming at Entropics, then it must be quite nice to, for you. You must feel quite comfortable because you've kind of got the, although the wrong type of science, you've got a kind of science background, but also you've worked with startups and kind of raising VC and all that kind of stuff. And that must be very, very interesting for you.
Yeah, I think it's a nice culmination of many different things that I've done in my career.
Yeah.
Whether it's the, you know, having the experience of working with big companies and big organizations, which we hope to do in the future as we develop our technologies, whether it's the knowledge of getting companies up and running off the ground, which is something we very much did at IP Group.
I was gonna say, understanding the process and the kind of the stages that companies go through.
Yeah, commercializing technologies, recognizing the importance of intellectual property and all of that, recognizing that it's not always a linear path, that and there are real challenges along the way. So in many respects, it helps that I've had a range of different experiences in different areas and careers.
So you kind of know what good looks like, and you kind of, I guess, you've seen things, people do things badly, seen people do things well, and I guess it's trying to take the best bits, I guess.
Absolutely. And, hopefully the benefit of a few grey hairs, then I've seen, some successes, I've seen some problems and failures, and I'm sure we'll encounter both of those as we develop in tropics over the coming years.
So kind of, you started in tropics relatively recently, and I know you've got some good traction and you're doing some really interesting things, but kind of what were your biggest challenges to date, kind of getting a good business off the ground and kind of starting then?
Right, so I think I've put them into three or four categories. The first one is COVID.
Yeah.
So the foundation date for the company was the 1st of April 2021.
Excellent.
No,
brilliant.
No April Fool's joke. But really, the company didn't get up and running properly because we were mid-COVID.
Yep.
We were on the lookout for some facilities where we could base the company. It was difficult to find them.
Yep.
It was difficult to visit them and see what was available. And in fact, a general feature in the Northwest is that there is something of a shortage of, real high-quality development labs for young businesses, which offer flexible capabilities.
We're quite fortunate in Cheshire in terms of we've got SciTech Darsby, where you're based, we've got Audley Park, etc. But when you look beyond that, I think you're absolutely right. I think we take those out of the equation, there is a dearth of availability.
Yeah. Yeah, and even in the places where we looked, the availability was pretty limited.
Sure.
So even though facilities do exist, they weren't always available when we needed them.
Yeah.
But COVID, I guess, was the first challenge.
Yep.
We really couldn't get the business up and running in the right facility as quickly as we wanted. And then, like many young businesses, one of the second challenges was cash.
Yep.
And obviously, David and I, as co-founders, we funded the business during the early stages. But we didn't have the resources to realise all the ambitions
Absolutely,
of the business, obviously, in the future.
But I guess because of your background, you kind of knew what kind of capital you wanted. So, I think that's one, if founders are inexperienced, understanding the different types of capital, what you actually want, what's the purpose for your company, etc. I guess you've kind of had that knowledge already.
Yeah, that's right. And building the story about how much cash we needed, what we'd achieve with that cash over a certain period of time, or what we'd hope to achieve. And building the financial case for that, building the commercial case as well, and trying to put it in the context of the industry developments at the time and the competitive issues at the time, trying to highlight what we felt that we had that was a little different, our unique points. So, I had some of the experience of pulling that sort of investment case together. And fortunately, as we'll talk about a little later, then we secured some capital from DeepBridge. So we sorted out, the COVID challenge. We sorted out the cash challenge. I mean, the other issue was colleagues, another C. So trying to find the right people to join the business and having that extra strong foundation of the capital behind us gives us the credibility and also the longer term potential to bring people into the business.
And you kind of mentioned that the dearth of kind of available space, if you like, but in terms of people and skills in the area, are you confident that you've got that there's a talent pool there for you to you tell us?
Well, our first employee who joined us in October last year, once we established the lab in Dursbury, he'd actually been Dave's final PhD student from his time in Sheffield.
Great.
And so those close connections were very important to us. We also then had a continuing connection with the lab in Sheffield.
Yep.
So, in fact, one of our next recruits is also coming from that lab.
Brilliant.
Because we've got some very specific requirements.
Yeah, and if you've had people work in that kind of area and get it, then absolutely.
That's right. Yep. But on top of that, we were keen to hire somebody who had capabilities in computational biology.
Sure.
Bioinformatics and machine learning. That's a really important part of our technology to identify patterns and trends in gene sequences that are associated with certain functions in enzymes. And so that's a very specialized area, machine learning for bioinformatics and gene sequences. And we've managed to identify somebody who'll be joining us shortly as well. But that was much more of an open challenge trying to contact labs that we knew
yep.
who were skilled in this area. And we've managed to recruit a handful of people who will be joining us over the course of the coming weeks
Brilliant.
To continue to grow the business.
So how has the kind of company evolved to date? And I guess kind of importantly, how did your kind of first funding, your SEIS funding, help you kind of evolve the business?
So, I mean, the comparison, it's like night and day.
Yep.
You know, a year ago, we were, you know, like many great tech companies who started up in a garage, yep. Like Amazon and Hewlett-Packard and Apple. Not that we put ourselves in that category, yep. but we were working out of a garage.
Absolutely. So that's where all the best kind of companies like that started.
So, so Dave, because we didn't have access to facilities, Dave had converted a workshop at home so that he could do some of the early scouting work behind our technology. And we had no employees.
Yep.
So in terms of the progress during the course of the last 12 months or so, we recruited our first member of staff. By the end of the summer, we'll probably have around half a dozen people working within the business, either directly as employees or working through collaborations that we've established with a couple of universities.
Brilliant.
We've been able to invest in some equipment to increase the efficiency and the throughput and the effectiveness
yep.
of our operations in Dursbury. So we've got some high throughput, you know, protein production and screening capabilities. We've been able to invest in DNA sequencing technology, which is an important.
Boom.
These are almost the tools of the trade in enzyme development, and some robotic equipment as well for liquid handling and pipetting. And all of these will really radically change our throughput and our efficiency in the future.
You mentioned DNA sequencing there, and obviously that's a, I don't know whether trend's the right word, but it's massively kind of topical at the moment, yeah. etc. Kind of, what are the opportunities that avail themselves to Entropics, and kind of why is that, and kind of what's going on out there?
So I think the when we look at the way that those opportunities have availed themselves, then the trends that really stand out for me, one of them is the trend for sustainability.
Yep.
And obviously our target to develop enzymes that are capable of degrading plastics feeds into that real issue, the challenge of sustainability yep. in terms of waste. But there's another sustainability angle to the use of enzymes, because increasingly big organizations are turning towards biomanufacturing as a means of developing products. Mm-hmm. So products that may well have been developed through conventional chemical processes in the past, fossil fuel developments, increasingly people are exploring biomanufacturing
okay.
routes to that which are more sustainable. And in fact, yeah, a McKinsey report just last year suggested that up to 60% of all physical goods in future could be derived through biomanufacturing processes.
Okay.
So there's that's another trend that we see that we're playing into in terms of
our efforts.
So
that removes the need for plastics, et cetera, and what have you.
Well, obviously there is a desire to reduce and eliminate plastics where possible. Obviously, we're keen to develop methods for handling plastics in terms of recycling
yep.
them back to their raw materials, make them more sustainable. But more generally, there's a drive to more sustainable manufacturing processes mm-hmm. away from some of the more conventional ones. And I think the other trend that you hinted at as well was the growing capability of some of these biotech developments.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think biotechnology will be one of the great industries of the 21st century. It's already a phenomenal industry, and
yep.
it's for me, having not been so closely involved with it in the past, it's a real privilege and excitement
to see the opportunities and kind of
yeah.
again the trends and the way the world's moving.
That's right, and many of the tools of synthetic biology, molecular biology, have just been transformed in recent years.
Mm.
I mean, one of the great success stories of the UK biotech industry, Oxford Nanopore,
yep.
they've helped to revolutionize DNA sequencing to make it much more cost-effective and high throughput, and that's something that we're capitalizing on. For example, the manufacture of genes that
yep.
we use as a starting point to develop our enzymes. You can you can order genes, and they'll, you know, people will synthesize the DNA involved in that gene, and you'll receive it in a you know, a few weeks' time. And that type of tool, that capability, certainly wasn't available decades ago. And so those trends of sustainability, you know, improved capabilities in molecular biology, then, you know, we're certainly developing them. And I think I picked up a quote which I noticed yesterday from one of the directors of Kerry, who recently bought an enzymes business.
They did, yep.
Called Selector in Leipzig. And he suggested that the food and pharmaceutical industries are on the cusp of a new wave of innovation, where new developments in biotechnology, synthetic biology, and precision fermentation are radically transforming these sectors. This includes disruptive new enzymes. So again, we're building on that trend. We're part of that development in biotech.
So we kind of talked about the challenges, we've talked about the kind of the bigger world, but kind of what have been the kind of standout highlights for you since kind of, you know, taking that plunge during COVID to kind of crack on with Entropics?
Well, one of the first highlights for me is always customers. So we were able to sign up a customer who was a previous collaborator of Dave Hornby when he was at Sheffield. And we were able to run our first development program, where we create a range of enzymes, we screen them for performance, and then we identify the ones that have high performance that might be useful for our customer. So having gone through that development cycle, that's a great sense of achievement.
Yep.
That was the first one that we'd done. Another highlight.
Is that kind of the moment where you kind of thought, yeah, we can do this? This is exactly what we're trying to do.
And you know, just as we were saying earlier on, it's never a straight linear pathway.
Nope,
so there were hurdles along the way. We had some really significant delays in a couple of our suppliers when we were developing some of those products. And that improves the learning that you have the next time you do it. It's almost like turning the handle on your pipeline machine and seeing which bits work well and, you know, which bits need oiling and which bits need improving. So, you know, customer development was certainly a highlight. The other highlight, I have to say it, was getting cash from DeepBridge, because that provides a really strong foundation for the coming months and years. It enables us to achieve what we hope to achieve over the next year or two.
And what was, obviously we talked earlier about the challenges of getting that early cash in, etc. Kind of, what was it about DeepBridge, or why were DeepBridge a good partner for you?
So as a brand new business, then I think many venture capital investors are looking for some more traction, a little more maturity in the business, maybe more stability of early revenues before they make their investments in a company. There aren't too many companies who really invest at that embryonic seed-corn stage. So we certainly benefited from the SEIS, the Seed Enterprise Investment Scheme component of the first part of the investment from DeepBridge. And I think on top of the sort of stage of development, which seemed to fit DeepBridge's interest, then there's also there's the knowledge of the business.
Yep.
And obviously in the DeepBridge life sciences team, there are experts in technology who are also experts in investment. And so it's not necessary to spend a lot of time during your investment pitch to describe your technology in detail, because they already understand it. They're trained scientists who now do investment.
Yep.
And that's very compelling as well. And then I think the most important thing is that there has to be a very strong overlap between your vision for the business and the investor's vision for the business.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you know, that there'll be a clash at some stage during the development and life and growth of the business. And so, you know, I felt that, you know, we were lucky to have Alison Morn, who was working with us in the life science team. She seemed to appreciate and understand what we were trying to achieve immediately. And so, you know, that commonality between our view and her view, I think, provided a good foundation for the investment.
Brilliantly. Brilliant. And I think, you know, look, from our perspective, I think,
you know, we find SEIS is a great kind of testing bed, if you like. It's allows us to go slightly earlier with companies because almost the due diligence we can do with the SEIS leads on to EIS. So when we are supporting a company with EIS follow-on cash, it's because we've done due diligence, getting to know you guys, working with you. And I think it's a great model that that works. That means we can go slightly earlier than maybe other VCs would because we've got that confidence. We've been there and we know you guys and what you're up to. Okay, kind of looking forward, what are your hopes, objectives? What are your plans for kind of the next 12 months and then beyond that in kind of next 3 years?
So the next 12 months, we're very keen to make some very tangible achievements. So we've got our objective set in order to develop, identify certain enzymes that will have degradation activity in certain plastics. That's one of our target areas. We're also keen to continue some developments for certain enzymes for the diagnostics and life science sector. And there are proprietary R&D developments that we're looking after in-house. On top of that, of course, we're also keen to complete the customer development work that we're doing and ideally to pick up one or two other customer projects as well, where we can prove out our technology. So certainly for the first 12 months, then it's achieving those tangible milestones that demonstrate both to DeepBridge and hopefully to other potential investors that we've reached those like value inflection points almost. We've done something more concrete. We've taken the business on and we've developed it further. I think in the longer term, then it's all about creating the right building blocks, the right foundation for the business. So there are quite a number of fairly complex building blocks behind our technology, starting off with the computational analysis that I mentioned earlier on, and then developing a very slick, efficient, high-throughput process that enables us to generate lots of enzymes, to screen them, to pick them, and then to...
Gives you the scalability then, I guess, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Then to purify those enzymes and to scale them up using fermentation techniques. So, over the course of the 3 years, then we need to embed and develop and scale all of those capabilities so we have a really strong foundation for the business for the future. And certainly after 3 years, we hope that we'll start to see more predictable revenue streams.
Absolutely.
And most importantly, emerging commercial partnerships, because we need to test our products and to develop our technology alongside industry partners who have those real-world challenges that we're trying to meet, rather than working in complete isolation in our own labs.
Absolutely, as you said, kind of making yourself available and appealing to other co-funders as well, because, I think, I'm sure Alison's kind of spoken to you that, we always want co-funders to come alongside us, and that's always a great testament to what you guys are doing, so that'd be a huge...
Hopefully, if we tick off some of those objectives, it'll put us in a good position.
Absolutely, that'd be grand.
To start.
So that's Entropics, that's you, that's where you are. Kind of, with these podcasts, we like to kind of bring people to life a bit to our listeners and our viewers and things. And so kind of what are your interests away from work?
Away from work, I guess the first interest would be sport.
Yep.
Now much more watching it rather than playing it, unfortunately. But as a kid, I was always a really keen competitive sports
person. Just blame that on the time pressures of running a business.
So, when I was a kid, I was a competitive runner, so very keen, obsessed by that. And then I switched to playing basketball when I was at university in my 20s. And then, but then more recently, now that the knees are finished, then I've actually taken up indoor rowing.
Okay.
Which is it's a good workout, probably similarly obsessive to doing distance running. Good activity outside of sport, and watching sport as well. Certainly watching Liverpool and going along to some of the matches.
We'll gloss over that as a United fan, but that's fine.
Absolutely. I'd say I'm a bit of a technology enthusiast.
Yep,
so, I like to follow technology, whether it's in podcasts, whether it's reading books, whether it's watching documentaries. So I'm a tech enthusiast. And I've also started doing a bit of voluntary tutoring.
Okay.
So yeah, I trained as a physicist. I'm still keen on science and maths. So I tutor a little bit of maths for friends and family.
Fantastic. Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's good fun.
Good
fun. I don't know whether the tutee.
I was going to say, are they enjoying it or not? That's a different matter, I guess. But yeah, that's excellent. So the question I ask all of our guests on the podcast is about the Deepbridge dinner party. If you could invite three guests, no friends or family, because we don't offend anybody, but yeah, dead or alive, three guests to come along to the Deepbridge dinner party, who would those guests be?
Well, fortunately, Andrew, you gave me a bit of advance notice of this, so I was able to have a good think. It's almost like Desert Island.
It is, absolutely. I mean, I can't say that this is a new kind of factor, you know. But, yeah.
The first one I've picked, I trained as a physicist, even though I haven't done physics for decades, would be Isaac Newton.
Okay, yep.
But there are a few reasons for that. Obviously, he was one of the great giants of the physics and maths world and achieved so much, not just in laws of motion, obviously in our school textbooks everybody would know about his laws of gravity and laws of motion, the apple falling on the tree inspiring his thoughts, but he was so much more than that. He was almost like a 17th century Elon Musk in a way. And one of his quotes was, no great discovery was ever made without a bold guess. And that notion of, almost entrepreneurial ideas, taking a bold step.
Absolutely, having an idea and believing in it, I guess. Yeah,
I really believe in that. I subscribe to that. And, taking a bold guess, occasionally being a bit of a maverick. Yeah. And he had those attributes about him. He became the master of the Royal Mint.
Yes.
So he had those financial aspects to his character, a real polymath, interests in all sorts of different areas. He was interested in theology.
Yep.
He was interested in history and became an MP.
Yeah, he did.
For a couple of years. So, one of the heroes. Now, I don't know whether he'd be a great dinner party guest, because I believe from reading, he was quite shy, introverted, but nonetheless, a wonderful...
couple of glasses of wine, get him going, I'm sure it'd all come out.
Yeah. Absolutely, apple pie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the first.
I'm not sure he's quite like Elon Musk. I don't think he had a Twitter account, so yeah.
That's true. Yeah. But remarkable parallels in terms of this, the development of concepts and ideas. And even, Elon Musk, people would say that his attempts to travel to Mars is almost fantastical and very, daring, a bold idea. Isaac Newton spent a lot of his time trying to develop alchemy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So again, quite a fantastical idea, which I don't believe he ever cracked. He would be my first guest.
Brilliant.
And
number two?
Second guess goes back to my times as a competitive runner when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And one of my idols was Steve Ovett.
Yep.
The runner's runner, I'd say.
Yeah.
Again, perhaps renowned as, I've never met him, renowned as being, a bit of an introvert, shy character, but quite rebellious.
Yeah.
Which I quite like. There's a little bit of a rebellious streak, waving to people down the home straight as he was winning his gold medals. But again, he was a multi-talented guy, not just in running. So he, when he was a teenager, he won the national 400 meters championships.
Okay.
But he could also run, he also finished second in the national cross country. So he had this incredible range.
Yeah.
He had the Sussex record for long jump as a kid. So, just real talent.
Yeah. Because when I was growing up, it was kind of just after Ovett and Co, et cetera, and things.
Yes.
And so I grew up with Co and Cram. And Ovett was always kind of, he said, the one that wasn't as well known to kind of, dare I say, a slightly younger generation, in the sense that Steve Cram went on to his media career, Lord Co went on to do his fantastic things, and Steve Ovett was kind of, was not as well known to our generation.
Disappeared back into a regular life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But runner's runner, I think.
Good, and then number three.
Last one. Apologies for this, Andrew, as a Man United supporter, but it would be Jurgen Klopp. And you know, maybe Jürgen would be a bit of a balance to the some of the introverted characters of Isaac Newton.
Isaac Newton or Steve Irwin would have to say anything, would they?
Yeah, exactly. So lots of reasons for picking Jürgen Klopp, not just because I'm a Liverpool fan, and because he seems such a an engaging character. But I think I've always felt that there is a big overlap between the competitiveness of sport and business.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot to learn, whether it's from Alex Ferguson or Jurgen Klopp or other great leaders in football.
Yep.
There's a lot to learn both for sport and for business and life. And I read once that the most popular leaders are those that have humility, integrity and competence.
Yep.
And
if you lack any of those, that it doesn't work.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think Jürgen Klopp's got all of those. But on top of that, he's really passionate and he'd be good fun round a dinner party. But he's also got a sense of perspective on life that I wish I could develop a little more. One of his quotes is that sport is the most important of the least important things in life. Yep. And so having that sense of perspective, good fun, great leader, good balance in life, and I think he'd enjoy a beer or two as well during the meal. So
absolutely, I think that'd be an interesting table. Excuse me. I don't think Isaac Newton and Steve Yvette would get a word in edgeways, but that's not a problem at all. So that's great. So thank you very much for your time, Rob. Really great to catch up with you. Really great to speak through. And good luck with everything in Tropics. And it sounds like exciting times ahead.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. Good to be here.
Cheers. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like us to cover any specific topics in future podcasts, then please email us at discovery@deepridgecapital.com.
This podcast was brought to you by Deepridge Capital LLP. Deepridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.